We have, for the last 50 or 60 years, been at war with nature. And if you think that that's a little bit of an over-exaggeration, we have herbicides, pesticides, insecticides. It is a way of killing pests, of killing insects, of killing plants. Over that period of time, we on the land, but we haven't been working with the land. As a matter of fact, what we've been doing as we've become more modern, as we've become more smart farming, is that we're turning further and further away from the way that nature would do something. And what we're doing is we're imposing our solutions onto it. Now, those solutions did work. I mean, the first applications of nitrogen did great things. The problem is it's kind of like giving kids sugar for food. It will give them energy and it will have them buzzing around, and it certainly kind of will, in some sense, feed them. The problem is, after a while, it's going to make them fat and it's going to make them sick, and they're going to have tooth decay and they're going to end up with diabetes and fatty liver disease, and they're not going to be healthy at all. And that's the parallel that we've seen with the way we approach this modern farming, using that kind of like technology, using efficiencies as a way of getting food from the land. So my name is Bridget Murphy, and I'm standing here on the farm up in County Sligo, in a place called Dromard on the side of the Ox Mountains overlooking the Atlantic. I farm 125 acres. Sheep, I keep some ponies for grazing on the mountain. I keep bees, the native black bee. The fields up here are really, really small. The stone walls are about a meter or 2 meters high, about just over a meter wide. And we'd have fencing on top of that because we have mountain sheep, which have the ability to jump over absolutely anything. I'd be the 9th generation that I know of on the land. My daughter Skye would be the 10th. And somebody in our family a very, very, very long time ago decided to tree line every stream on the older side of the farm. They tree lined every single one of the small fields. So it's really interesting when we're talking about agroforestry, when we're talking about a whole lot of ideas around bringing back habitat, our ancestors did this. They farmed in that way. And it's interesting to see the species of trees they put in. I mean, obviously you've got your staples, your ash, your holly, your birch. There was also a lot of black walnut. And in the old days, people used to feed the black walnuts to the pigs. It was a protein crop for pigs. Autumn is a very busy time of the year. Like spring, there's a huge amount of jobs that kind of like spring, you'd be putting the seeds in, and in autumn, you're taking the seeds out and spreading them. I'm going to point out the right-hand side of this lane because there is a very, very, very beautiful wall which was built by myself. So it took me 2 years in my spare time. What I decided to do when I was rebuilding the wall was to afterwards go back and put in things like comfrey. I've allowed the nettles to come up. They don't get trimmed. One is because I have a lot of hairs and the leverets are usually in the undergrowth. But the second thing is, in terms of what's growing here, so in the places where there'd be shadow, there's a lot more ferns. In the places where the sun comes through, you've got the foxgloves. You've got the original old white clover. But I've also included some other bits and pieces like white borage. So it is quite an essential one if you are kind of carrying a heavier stock of pollinators on your land. So I'm heading across a field that's called the half acre. And looking at it, one can see straight away that it's much bigger than half an acre, except that was the name that has traditionally been given to it. When you inherit a piece of land, it becomes quite interesting to note that you inherit the names that came along with that land. So this field is called the half acre. And then when you walk over the stream, which is just on the edge of it, you come into Beasy Lynott's cottage. And then when you go past Beasy Lynott's cottage, you get to Andy's Fields. And once you've gone through Andy's Fields, you get to what's called Cow Hill. I'm going to open the gate. And I'll be calling the sheep down. I'm going to call the sheep down. Now, instead of training a dog, so I just decided to train the sheep instead. they pass that knowledge down to each other. So the moment my sheep hear this noise, and you can just block your ears because it might be a bit loud, they present themselves. So however far away the sheep are, as long as they can hear me clankling on the gate, they'll present themselves and they'll come down at a good trot. So here they come and they're heading over the stream, and it just allows me every single day or every second day just to make sure that nobody has maggots, that nobody has a sore foot, and then of course they can head straight back up the mountain and carry on doing what they do best, which is pretty much eating and sleeping. So in front of me are my flock of Cheviot sheep. The lambs are usually ready for slaughter by between August and October. My lambs are actually booked out before they're even born. When I first came to Ireland, I think reps was just starting. My dad was one of the first entrants into reps. Coming from Africa, we were used to a lot more of nature around you, a lot more nature in your face. And there was really this sense that there was a whole bunch of stuff lacking. I decided that there would be no chemicals, fertilizers that were only natural fertilizers. And I started learning about soil and the fact that what needs to happen is that you need the right fungi, you need the mycorrhizals, you need a really, really healthy functioning soil. Within that, then you start having all of these bacteria and these amazing organisms that transform insoluble or inaccessible nutrients. They make them accessible to the plants. You know, when we talk about best farming practice, the question is best for whom? I mean, is this best for the land? Is this best for the farmer? Nature doesn't work in a very tidy way. Nature herself, if you have a look at her, she tends to get quite messy. And it's within that mess, it's within those thistles that you start finding the caterpillars. It's within the nettles that you start finding the ladybirds. So I'm walking down through my woodlot and I just stumbled across a rock and nearly nosedived into the floor. What I've done in the farm is, instead of the traditional way of how we understand planting forestry, which is to bring a digger in and put in rows and drains, what I decided to do was to have a look at how nature would have done it. So straight away we have a row of much older trees which provide the mother function for a lot of the younger trees. I have a boggy section up at the top which would have the willows. It comes into the ash. Ash just loves wet. You go from the ash into the alder. The alder trees are nitrogen fixing. They grow very, very, very quickly. And then the birch is at the bottom. Then you would have the understories, which would be smaller trees like holly, white thorn, black thorn. And then on the margins, there's the rowan, or what we call the mountain ash. And right down at the bottom then, I would have planted in sort of more shrubby trees like the elder. And then on the ground, I put in bluebells and meadow sweet. So this woodlot is about 6 years old now. But the idea is that I have them dotted all the way around the farm. If at any point in time I put my finger on the pause button with, say, for example, animals, the stock for any new trees would come from these nursery copses. These copses and these little mini forests then become an organism in and of themselves, and they start relating to each other and they start feeding each other or out-competing each other. So basically, I'm just going over to feed the ponies. So forgive the gate. They're visiting a field that belongs to a neighbor. Come on. So basically we have a mother and a father and two daughters. Well, they're just getting a treat at the moment. Yay. Which one didn't get much? Echo. I use them up on the commonage. They're given a wee bit of feed every single day just so that they can come past and get a hello. So their function up on the mountain is to diversify the grazing regime, because when you only have sheep eating at a piece of land, especially if the sheep are on that land full time for say 7 months in a row, which is what we have to do under GLOSS, is that the sheep are very, very fussy, picky eaters, which means that the stuff that they don't like tends to be the stuff that grows ahead and ends up taking over that habitat. So by putting in another grazer, it allows for the mountain to be grazed evenly, if that makes any sense. So for example, heather, where you're wanting to keep heather growth quite low, the ponies love woody stuff. So they would kind of keep that eaten back. The diversity of the plants that are growing on the mountain, it stops them from ending up just being one or two species. So having that diversity allows just for the space for other plants to get a foothold. The other thing, of course, is when the ponies are walking around, their feet make a scuff mark in the ground. And that allows for little pools of water to form, which allows for things like dragonflies to hatch out. If I was speaking to farmers who are farming intensively, especially people who sometimes feel that people who are doing this farming for nature are somehow being critical or vilifying them or in ways farmer bashing, there's two things I'd like to say. I mean, one, on a daily basis, there are things that you can do, really small things that can help. Your margins, your hedgerows. Make sure the dandelions are there. Make sure that people aren't going and strimming it sort of three or four times over the summer. Let it look messy, because in that mess you're going to have the field mice and you're going to be able to kind of provide habitat and food. And on a second level, I think that there's a much bigger question that farmers need to be looking at. And the one is that I hear so many farmers, especially the dairy farmers these days, saying that we have to intensify, we have to get bigger, because if we don't get bigger, we can't make ends meet. And it's quite important at that point to sort of turn around to the industry and say, wait, hold on a moment. Let's produce both what we and the land can deliver, and do it in a way that maybe, yes, maybe we will produce less milk, but the litres that we are producing are going to have a much higher nutrient quality to them. So we produce less, but we produce that less with much higher value to it. And to turn around to the industry and say, find a way that becomes economically viable for us.